Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's NPL show. And this week, we're going to be joined shortly by Northern Premier League chairman, Mr. Mark Harris. That interview coming up shortly. But he did such a good job last time of being Mark Harris's warm-up act. I thought I'd get him back on the show. It's a non-league reporter from the other side of the Pennines to kick the show off this week. It's Mr. Thomas Feeney joins us now. Hello, Thomas. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you, mate. What a lovely tribute you've made to me, mate.
I mean, we have got Mark coming up shortly. And just to say, Mark's interview was done before this one, only by an hour or so. But Thomas has obviously got his eye on the National League and what's going on there. So we've done the interviews back to front, if that makes sense. But I don't think too much has happened since I interviewed Mark, in all fairness. So we can cover off the angles quite comprehensively, I think. Right, Thomas, where are we up to with the National League? What's happening?
Well, the update as of this moment in time, so the season is done. That is it. There'll be no more regular league matches. It was voted through quite comfortably. Just under 90% had voted before they released it was going to be voted through, that it had, the season was done. And but basically, it was a case of the majority of the National League North clubs, the majority of the National League South clubs, and then effectively clubs 8 through to the bottom of the table had voted in the National League to end the season. Obviously, there had been a few clubs that hadn't voted yet, but I know one club that was willing to delay what their vote would be for another week. So I think that's why they released the vote early, before all the votes had come in, because obviously, if you add another week to the whole procedure, you're then in a position where maybe there might have been certain clubs that were having to add some sort of weeks or maybe even a month or two to play a contract. So that's why that decision was made. And it's now just very interesting what will happen. And exactly what will happen, I think, really is going to be anyone's guess in terms of what the whole structure will look like come the end of it.
Now, just to say, I mean, there's been, you know, a fair number of people have suggested why in Step 3's case, the Alliance League's case, why weren't the clubs consulted or get to vote on what happened? I think we're kind of seeing that now, aren't we? It's depending on where you are in the league table, it takes your view on this matter.
In terms of the, will the season end, yes or no, I felt the clubs getting their say was 100% the right option, because it was pretty clear which way it was going to go, although only 25% of the vote went to the North and South clubs, 75% went to the National League clubs. So if there had been, you know, some kind of twist in terms of the voting, it could have gone a different way. But in terms of this next step, obviously, you know, you look at AFC Fylde as an example. They are in the relegation places in the National League. Their owner has made it very clear. He thinks it should be a points per game basis, but relegation should not be included in this. You then look at Kings Lynn Town, who currently in the National League North are second in the table, but using points per game, they would go ahead of York City. Their owner has today revealed that they will be wanting points per game, meaning they will go top of the table. Wealdstone, who are in the National League South and are top, are also on that viewpoint, because points per game would not affect them and they would stay top. So it literally is just a case of, you know, how can my club benefit from the decision? Right, we will go with that. Because, and in fact, you know, in fairness...
And to be honest, that's not a criticism of the clubs. That's what they should be doing.
can you blame them, really? You know, you look at Barrow, who, how many years ago, were voted out of the Football League. You know, I've seen some ridiculous statements from fans of other clubs saying, oh, Barrow fans should not be saying their club deserves to go up. If any other club was in that Barrow's position, they would be saying, we deserve to go up.
And it is going down to the wire, all this, in a lot of ways, because, you know, that May cut-off thing, I mean, they had another week, I think, before they really needed to make a decision on the season being ended. There's no rush, is there? This is what I don't necessarily understand with Step 3 and 4 and below. There's no rush, is there, deciding what happens? Because there's a long way to go before the AGM Cup, for example, and that kind of thing. We don't have to decide this week, do we?
I think the only problem would be for the National League North and, well, National League and North and South clubs, is the big question of whether they will say, right, the playoffs are going to happen. Because if that is the case, and the registration window has closed, yeah, then obviously you're then having to basically, if you say, if you're in the playoff places and you say, right, lads, your contracts have run out, good luck, you know, all leave on good terms, and then a week later you're told, right, the playoffs are now happening, and you're having to then go, hi, player we a week ago said could leave. Do you want to come back for the same amount of money? No, no, we can't pay you extra money. Please just accept the terms you want before we got rid of you. Probably the one thing that really does need to be looked at quite quickly. But I think in terms of the rest of it, and in terms of exactly what would happen, I'm not sure. You know, I'm really not sure, because I think the big thing is the National League don't want to rush something through and then be in a position where they're then having to kind of backtracking in any way. So in terms of a timescale, you know, while the vote in terms of will the season end was the 7th of May, that was a confirmed deadline. With this at present, there isn't one. And so the further consultation, I think that will probably be the one where they go, right, we've made a decision on this. That's that. I mean, when will that be? I don't know. You know, it really is a case of, when will it be? I don't think anyone knows the exact ins and outs of that at present.
There's a pyramid. That pyramid is obvious how it's shaped up and why it's there. But really, the game's fragmented in its decision making at the moment with regards to the Premier League, the EFL, the National League, even within the National League as well, with North and South, and the Alliance Leagues and that kind of thing. There needs to be a review after this, doesn't there? I think, surely.
Yeah, I think probably this is something that's been simmering in the waters for a few years in terms of just what the structure is and what can happen. And something like this, something so big, you know, in terms of the cancellation of matches and just exactly what's happening on the pitch, you know, now is the time to have them discussions. Now is the time to say, right, these are the changes that are going to be made and this is the reason why they're going to be made. But when will they happen? Well, you'd like to think the discussions will be kind of starting to take place now, really, because in terms of what the final decisions will be, I think there's going to be a lot of options and a lot of decisions to make in that time.
Well, breaking news as we go to the Dutch league has been null and voided and cancelled. No league title, and that's from top all the way down. So that's the first major league to make that decision. So we'll wait and see what's happening there, and whether that will have an impact on decision making across European football. But I'm enjoying our chats. I'm enjoying them, Thomas. just before we hand over to the interview with Mark Harris, I mean, lots of twists and turns. I mean, your Twitter feed's great at the minute, as is Andrew Simpson's, we should say. The non-league paper's been knocking it out of the park as well. How could people keep abreast of your work, and what have you got coming up over the weekend as well?
Well, if you want to give me a follow on Twitter, that's at Thomasine. I think this weekend I am working, I'm news reading, but I think I'll be in a darkened dream as well at the same time, because it's going to be very interesting just what happens now in the next few weeks, and hopefully be able to go through it.
Thomas Feeney there, non-league reporter from the other side of the Pennines, and you can follow Thomas's work on Twitter. That's at Thomas Feeney. Feeney spelt F-E-A-H-E-N-Y. And well, lots of things to digest from this week with regards to the National League, and also the news as well that Step 3 and 4 will be losing their main sponsor for next season. So lots of things to talk about and mull over. So for more on these matters, on Friday afternoon, I caught up with Northern Premier League chairman. It's a welcome return to Mark Harris. Well, Mark, a big thank you for joining us. And just to say, we're recording this on Friday afternoon, it's 4:10. So any breaking news with regards to the National League and that kind of thing, you're unaware of it at this stage.
That's correct. I think all that I know is what's in the public domain.
Yes. So hopefully by the end of this interview, we'll know. And that means we can just keep the interview going for as long as we like. But to kick things off, we need to start by talking about The news that's entered the public domain about the league sponsor and them dropping out of their association with the league for next season. So where does that leave the NPL?
Well, it leaves us looking for a new sponsor. I mean, what's been very unfortunate is the fact that the timings have coincided. But I think the first thing I want to say is that BetVictor's decision has nothing to do with the coronavirus. Just to give you a little bit more detail on that, the original deal that we signed, and it was signed very close to our AGMs last year, and it was for a two-year sponsorship, of which we completed one. Now, within that agreement, as with many sponsorship agreements, there was a 12-month break clause. We met with BetVictor at the end of February, myself, my counterparts from the Isthmian League and the Southern League. We'd requested the meeting so that we could start planning for next year. And we were given the news that they were not going to continue. Now, obviously, this it came as not so much as a shock as we were disappointed. The reasons that they shared with us really twofold, some within our control and some not. The circumstances not within our control is probably the ongoing sort of negativity that's out there in many media, not all, but many media towards betting in football, although bizarrely there doesn't seem to be the same kind of negativity around betting in other sports. But for whatever the reasons there from BetVictor's perspective, and they were fantastic to work with, that's what I want to make absolutely clear, they were a good sponsor to work with, very different to what we've worked with before in the shape of EverStick. I wanted a different set of things, but our clubs mostly stepped up to the mark. And if I'd been the marketing director of BetVictor and they'd put in place age gating and so many other things to try and show that they were a responsible gambling company, then ultimately I would probably have been questioning my investment as well. But the other side to it, which was more disappointing, is that not just in the Northern Premier League, but in the Isthmian and the Southern too, a small number of clubs that either didn't get on board with the sponsorship or actively showed some hostility to it, ultimately that probably put the final nail in the coffin, which is really, really disappointing. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit more about the reasons for that. But the other key point to make in and around this is when we got the news, we agreed with BetVictor that we wouldn't go public until May the 1st for one very good reason. That's nothing to do with keeping it from people or a lack of transparency. Quite simply this, BetVictor were working with us to find our new sponsor. And already a bit of work had been done to identify brands that we could effectively have almost a seamless handover to. Then the coronavirus happened and, of course, all bets were off. And it was at that point we went back to BetVictor, said, look, we need to be telling the clubs, we need to be telling supporters, but we need to be telling the clubs so that they're not assuming that there's going to be finance there next season when clearly it isn't.
It's got nothing to do with the coronavirus, but unfortunately it's come on with that backdrop, unfortunately. So, I mean, you said that you were working with them to try and do some kind of seamless handover to the next sponsor and that kind of thing. I mean, how challenging is this to find a new sponsor given the current economic climate?
It's a funny thing that, Ben, you know, many people, and you talk to clubs, fans, and we're all football fans at the end of the day, sometimes people think that there's a whole queue of people just lining up to hand over money for non-league football. Now, if anybody who's ever tried to raise money for a non-league football club will tell you, there isn't. So it's constantly a difficult job to be able to persuade brands that there's clear return on investment. The days of companies giving you money simply to make you go away and stop pestering them, they are gone, and they are gone forever. So any brand that wants to get involved with our level of the game, you've got to show them a clear return on investment, not just awareness of their brand, although that's important. So we were engaging with one particular brand, and then, as I say, the COVID-19 crisis happened. We then had to suspend fixtures. So what we're now doing is picking up the strands, not only with the brand that we were talking to, but also trying to talk to other brands. And all it means is that we've got to be a lot more creative. Now, this is not a good time to be asking any company to part with a substantial amount of money to become the next main sponsor of the Northern Premier League and possibly also the Southern and the Isthmian Leagues. But we are having conversations. They're tough ones. And we're going to have to be agile and we're going to have to be flexible, do a bit of thinking outside the box. Now, whether it's one sponsor or multiple sponsors that we get on board to share the load, my focus is on making sure that we are able to provide the same amount of central funding, if not more, but certainly the same amount of central funding to our member clubs that they've had this year. Now, we don't have a broadcast contract. We've got marvellous channels like the one we're speaking on now, but we don't have a broadcast contract like our friends in the National League. So we have to work twice as hard to make sure that we tell a really compelling story to brands that are out there.
And I was going to say, I mean, Betvictor and the previous sponsor obviously were keen on the idea of all three Alliance Leagues, you know, having continuity and the same sponsor. Given the challenges that have arisen here, I mean, do you feel that it's possible that the NPL could go alone with the sponsorship, or is it better to have a bit of solidarity and grow the eyes and ears, I suppose, for whoever comes on board to sponsor the division?
What the Betvictor sponsorship showed us is not only can it be done to have one brand sponsoring all three leagues, and bear in mind we nearly had that with Everstick. It's a matter for Everstick to explain why they branded one league Bostick and two not, but the Betvictor experience showed it can be done. There's an old saying that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and by and large the clubs of all three leagues delivered as well. So you look at that and that actually demonstrates that it can be done. So our first port of call is to look for a sponsor to take all three leagues. Now, if that then does not become possible, and I don't believe we're anywhere near that position, then clearly we would have to look at separate sponsors. But certainly the two or three conversations we've had already indicate that the appetite that is out there is still for one sponsorship covering 250 clubs, a national sponsorship, with many millions of online users, a substantial amount of people who go to games week in, week out. It's a great story to tell. I'm actually really grateful for Betvictor for working with us. And clearly we did deliver for them because they're giving us case study information that we're using in talking to potential successors.
Right, and just to clarify one last point on this subject. I mean, like you say, there is difficulty with regards to football and betting and that side of things. Have you ruled out going down that route again, or are you going down a different route entirely with regards to this?
I think there's another good old saying, which is you never say never again. Now, to reiterate the point I made before, I'd love to be in a position where you can pick and choose between that sponsor, that sector and that sector. Life isn't like that. It's quite interesting. When we actually announced the Betvictor sponsorship, amongst our clubs, there was maybe one voice of disapproval, certainly no more. And to anyone who says you shouldn't be shaking hands with the devil, you shouldn't be doing this, you shouldn't be doing that, I'd turn around to them and say, fine, you pay for the kit wash that has to be done two and three times a week. You find the money for the coach travel. You do this, you do that. And until you actually have to put your hand in your pocket or find the money for the 101 things that you need to do to keep a non-league football club running, it's actually very easy to pick and choose. And I'm sure we could all think of dream sponsors that we might have, but it's got to work for them. So to answer your question, no, I don't rule out another betting partner. But actually, betting isn't the point at issue. It's about having a sponsor coming from a sector that's perhaps not as heavily regulated as the betting area. The fact that we had a betting partner put a huge amount of pressure on our club volunteers to make sure that if they were promoting it, they were doing it in a way that wasn't going to leave them open to sanction because they've either broken that advertising code or that rule or whatever it may be. And I'm not talking football rules there. So it certainly was a challenge for our clubs, but they showed they could do it. So it would absolutely depend on who comes to the table. If I was looking for an ideal sponsor, you want to work with a sponsor that takes a tremendous interest in what goes on within the league, that wants to work with its member clubs to really maximise the return on investment. So, to answer the question in summary, never say never again.
There we go. Right, we'll park the sponsorship side of things for now, because there's other areas to cover while I've got you here, Mark. And since we last spoke, obviously there's been a bit of chatter about the consultation more generally into the decision to firstly terminate the season and then null and void it. Since then, I think UEFA's come forward and put that, you know, said how they would like various competitions around Europe to conclude. I mean, was it done too quickly, do you feel? I know when we spoke last, we were talking about the need to have clarity. But did we need clarity on the nulling and voiding?
No, I don't think so. I think that it was done correctly. Now, clearly there are some clubs out there that don't agree with that. And as I said the last time we spoke, I completely respect their right to voice those complaints. Now, I think we've seen some very interesting things in the course of the last week. I mean, you mentioned at the top of the interview about the National League. But let's just answer the whole question about could we and should we have consulted with our member clubs. I think the first port of call has to be the fact that our board, the Northern Premier League board, and identical within the Southern and the Isthmian League, we are each charged with making those decisions for our leagues. It's in our respective memorandums and articles of association. Secondly, within that, our board is made up of club representatives. We don't have a board of independent people who are not connected to our clubs, who don't have their fingers on the pulse. So these boards are made up of club representatives. Third point, we were actually given a very short period of time in which to provide the Football Association with a league view. Within that, now, some would say, well, why didn't you just turn around and tell the Football Association they can't have it yet? The system doesn't really quite work that way. But you've also got to consider that those 62 clubs needed clarity. Now, some of them could have continued without a question. Some of the more resourced ones could have continued to bide their time and see whether the season was going to be concluded. As we shared last time, the player contracts didn't actually terminate. In fact, they actually terminate today. Tomorrow, should I say. So they'd have already been in for the cost of those contracts up to that point. But it wasn't just about that. So they needed clarity. And we were having clubs telling us in various formats that they wanted to see the season over. The interesting thing about the National League voting is that what it shows is that when you do go out to your member clubs for a decision or their opinion on anything, the reality is they will all vote based on their own personal circumstances. So if we'd gone out to ask them what they wanted, null and void or points per game in this scenario, we know that the clubs at the very top would, by and large, not all, by and large, have said we think it should be on points per game. Those at the bottom of the league would have said absolutely not, it needs to be null and void because self-interest. And the ones in between, most of them probably wouldn't have been that bothered. I think it's significant that the letter that South Shields orchestrated with the clubs across our various steps. But step three, there are 88 clubs across the Northern Prem, the Southern League and the Isthmian League. And the letter that was sent challenging the decision was sent far and wide. 11 clubs out of 88 in the Prem divisions, those four Prem divisions, supported the South Shields challenge, i.e. they disagreed with what their leagues had done. So that's 11 out of 88. Down at step four, there's actually 140 clubs. 21 of them felt it should have been on a points-per-game basis. So you're looking at about 10% of clubs challenging the decision or expressing their disappointment with the decision. Therefore, 90% were actually in favour. And we've had various emails and calls saying it was the right decision. We've had calls saying they didn't think it was the right decision. But the most important thing that our clubs were telling us, and certainly our board concluded, was that the season needed to be concluded, that the clubs needed that certainty. And I haven't seen anything yet that tells me, and hindsight is a marvellous thing, that tells me that we didn't make the right decision. On a purely personal level, I would have liked to have perhaps had a week or two to at least have dialogue with the clubs who had expressed through supporting the South Shields letter that they weren't 100% in support of the decision. I would like the chance to have at least had some dialogue, but the system prevented that really from happening. But we are where we are. And as I say, I've not seen anything since that tells me that we got it wrong.
I was going to mention that, though, that the fact that I think we've said this on the show when we've had Andrew Simpson on or Tom Feeney in the past. We've said, you know, whatever decision the clubs voted on, there would be a split decision and it would come back to the committee anyway to decide. So with that regard, I think you're right. But, you know, with the regards to would have been nice to have a consultation, that kind of thing. Do you reckon one of the reasons why we've had so much reaction from clubs and all that is because they don't feel consulted and therefore they're all living on their own little islands rather than it being a unified effort in a way and coming up with some kind of consensus if one was possible?
Well, I've got to be honest with you. I don't think necessarily there is a consensus that is possible. I'm not actually convinced that there is this huge negative reaction. Twitter and things like that have a marvellous way of amplifying yes. the opinions of a small number of people. The louder that they shout, then the more that people believe the strength of the conviction. Based on the post bag that we've had within the league, I don't think that there is a groundswell of opposition to the decision that was made. Let's bear in mind that we're living in a media vacuum, so people haven't got a huge amount to actually write and talk about right now, which I think is certainly relevant. But as I said earlier, number one, the board of our league and the other two leagues are charged with making these decisions. I've had at least three chairmen on the phone to say, for God's sake, you don't need to come and do consultation because that's what we put you there for. We are actually all elected by the clubs to make these decisions. And by the way, we don't also have a huge queue of clubs volunteering to come and sit on the league management committee. I'd be delighted to welcome those on that would like to come on and make a difference for all our leagues. And therein lies the point. You're not making decisions as a board for the benefit of one, two or three clubs. You're making decisions that are based on the interests of 62 clubs. Now, that's not a particularly precise science. Sometimes it's straightforward. Sometimes it's not straightforward. And from day one, when you have to make a decision of this nature, then you are going to have people, and there's no right and there's no wrong. It works for some, it doesn't work for others.
Was any explanation given as to why you needed that fast turnaround? That, you know, you've got, it's Friday, we've got till Monday.
That's what we were asked for by the FA board. So I think presumably they would have had an FA board meeting the following week. So we were asked for a review which we then provided. But as I say, I don't think that it's a slight distraction because even if we had gone out to consult, it certainly wouldn't have changed the decision. You know, if the number of clubs that had come back objecting and supporting the South Shield challenge had been much higher, then you know that might well have painted a slightly different picture. But we are where we are. And we have to get on with the facts. And the fact that, as you just quoted, the Dutch Professional League has decided to go on a null and void basis, who's to say that the decision we made was wrong?
There is another point that's been made in various circles, and that is the regard of the integrity of the pyramid more generally, and the fact that it feels like everything from step three and below has been treated differently from step one and two, and certainly from the Football League and the Premier Division. I mean, that is a problem, isn't it? Firstly, getting out of this predicament we're in, and also for the future of the sport.
Yeah, it is great concern, Ben. I think that there are some realities that we have to face. In reality, the professional game is not going to be dictated to by the non-league game. And I'm sure we've all seen demands that, yeah, the Premier League should bail us out, the EFL should bail us out, the pro game should follow our lead. Yes, a great idea, but it doesn't actually work. They have a whole different set of priorities around broadcast deals. So they are going to have to decide whatever they want to do. The bigger concern for me is we're supposed to have one national league system. Now, rightly or wrongly, steps 3 to 7 came together and made a consistent decision. Now, it's a question you'd have to put to the National League as to why they have gone in the direction that they have gone. But it is concerning that we don't have a joined-up approach. It certainly wasn't for the want of trying.
Why did the FA then go down this route and not treat the Alliance Leagues like they've kind of been a bit hands off with the National League? Was that not an option? Do you feel?
I think there's a recognition that if we take Notts County, Chesterfield, the ex Football League clubs, their world is nothing like what Kendall Town, Market Drayton, Wisbeach. They operate in and live in totally different universes. Their world is totally different to our world. And I think gradually, partly through broadcast, partly through the fact that that league is, I think, with two or three exceptions, full-time, that's not non-league football. Non-league football is Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday. It's part-time players. That's non-league. The top end of the National League isn't non-league. And they're clearly aligning themselves with the professional game rather than with the non-league game. It'll be very interesting to see what the Step 2 clubs and how they vote when the National League finally gets around to deciding on how it is going to end its 2019-20 season, given that the only decision they appear to have made so far is to call a halt. So that'll be very interesting to see what the long term future is. But what I do know is that there's now an opportunity. What the COVID-19, the suspension of the fixtures, what the last few months have shown us is that there are some cracks in the National League system, and there's no point denying it. What we have to do is to say, right, do we actually just need to just pause, almost look at the reset button and say, have we got this right? Have we got the current structure right? Is it fit for purpose? Are the gaps between the various different levels, are they proportionate? And can clubs actually progress forward? So that's not a navel-gazing exercise. That's also about saying, should the emphasis be on quantity or should the emphasis be on quality? Have we got square pegs in round holes and all those lovely analogies? So it is absolutely time that we address some of these very key questions.
Been mentioned a few times about the fact that, like you touched upon, the National League is operating on another world compared to some clubs in the non-league world. Let's do a bit of blue sky thinking, if you will, Mark, if you excuse the terrible corporate phrase. Would it be beneficial now, given the scale and the scope of the majority of the clubs in the National League, for them to join the pro ranks officially rather than be in this grey area they find themselves in at the moment? And if you do agree with that, why would that be beneficial for a club you mentioned before, Kendall Town? Why would that be beneficial?
Okay, I'm going to slightly turn that round because, to be honest, it's not for me to say what I would do if I was the National. That's a matter entirely for them, and it's between them as a competition and their member clubs. What I'd prefer to do is to look at it from the perspective of our clubs. So for a club at Step 3 that has ambitions to progress in the game, but also for a Kendall Town to say, right, OK, as a club, I don't want to pick on Kendall anyway, any club operating at our first division level that has ambitions of progressing, what is going to make their life easier? So what's going to make their life easier is having a clearer path to be able to go for. What do I mean by that? I mean that as they progress up the leagues, they've got to improve their stadia. When they get to Step 2, the improvements that they have to make to their stadia, in my view, are completely disproportionate to the actual commercial returns that brings. It's a big, big jump in terms of what your wage bill is when you go from Step 3 to Step 2. But actually, the playing standard is not that great. So you might not be necessarily bringing vast extra numbers of people through the turnstiles, but you've got to get up to 500 seats quite quickly, and you've got to do various things. So I think there's possibly a jump that's too high there. Then you look in terms of the ways in which the monies are spread in the game. And although we'd love to have a situation where money didn't matter, tell you what, life's very tedious without it. So you've got to find a mechanism that actually gets the wealth spread a little more evenly. I mean, I've, in the non-league paper, I think only very recently, I quoted the figures that if you're a Step 1 club, you're getting reasonably substantial funds coming through that you don't get at Step 2, and that evaporate completely at Step 3 and Step 4. So if you look at the model from the perspective of me and other clubs in Step 3 and Step 4, if the National League did come to a position whereby their top step were to go to the professional game, that's beyond my control, and that's a matter for them. How their Step 2 clubs, where that would leave them, I think they're more close to where we are than they are to their colleagues at the very, very top level of what is currently non-league football. And for me, Step 2 should actually be the pinnacle of non-league.
Isn't there a danger, though, when you do that, you're just shifting the problem down a step, basically, and you know, suddenly, I mean, you get that in the National League North already with clubs wanting to get themselves into the National League as well, really, at all costs, if the truth be known. So, are you not just, you know, dangling the carrot a bit further down for clubs to make that leap?
The longer the lockdown goes on, the more likely it is that there's going to have to be a complete sense of realism amongst clubs and players. Without wanting to offend players, the reality is, as any chairman will tell you, that it's probably your biggest item in your entire costs. And players have short careers, but they are comparatively well paid for it. Going forward, I can't see a position where clubs will either be able to sustain the number of contract players or what they pay the players that they have. So there's going to have to be a bit of realism. What we don't know yet is the volumes in which people are going to start watching football again, when that's going to happen. Are there going to be any restrictions on the number of people you can have in your bar? And all those other things that actually put the money in the bank account to be able to meet all the costs. So that's going to mean that chairman, club committees, directors have to have a real, real good think about their cost base. So I think there will be a filtering down through the game. You're right in your point, Ben, that says if you do effectively bump everybody up one step, then it does put clubs closer to the promised land. But I think there's going to be filtering the other way, a sense that, you know, prices are going to have to come down potentially, player wages are going to have to come down. The days when players could expect this signing on fee and that signing on fee are less and less likely the longer and longer that the lockdown goes on. So we are approaching a bit of a new dawn. So if we're going to do that, then we've got to think really, really radically to actually say it's no longer simply enough to go, well, we've done it that way since the year dot. Is there a better way?
Is there a better way?
I think we can fine-tune this. I think that the leagues are too big. And by the way, this is a purely personal view. This is not the view of the board of the Northern Premier League. This is purely my personal view. Go and talk to any club manager, any player, any fan. The biggest complaints, there's too much travelling. It's too expensive. We put too much pressure on our players, our supporters' pockets in getting to games. Can we reduce midweek? So one of the things that we're doing in the league at the moment is just having a look at the various contingencies, depending on when we finally do get to kick a football competitively again. You know, some managers say, well, could we not find a way of getting rid of midweeks so we can actually cut out having to go to wherever it may well be during the week? Okay, so you can do that. But the problem is that then puts extra weeks into the season if you want to take all your midweeks out. And for every week that you extend the season, we reckon the cost to NPL clubs alone is between £100,000 and £125,000. Now, again, you don't always want to say that money is everything, but money is a very compelling topic. And when you're asking clubs to incur extra costs, although obviously we have a lot of non-contract players, many clubs will not pay those non-contract players if they're not playing, but not all. So when you elongate the season to accommodate that sort of thing, you do come up with a really, really long season. But it's something that we have to look at. So should we perhaps be looking to slim down the number of divisions to reduce the amount of travel? That's something we might need to look at. Do we have the right number of divisions at the right steps? Perhaps need to look at that. But in the round, I think the focus needs to be on quality rather than quantity. I think it's fair to say that a number of clubs have come up from Step 5 who've really done brilliantly, absolutely superb. They've grasped the fact that it is different when you go up from the North West Counties top division into our first division. We do things slightly differently. You might have to wear a tie, God forbid. And there is a different culture. And culture is one of the toughest things for a club to get its mind round as it progresses. So, not all, but while some have really grasped it, others haven't. And without naming names, you look around at some clubs in some leagues, not just the Northern Premier League, where actually they're clinging on by their bootlaces in some respect. Now, that's not to say you're going to go out tomorrow and promptly relegate clubs that shouldn't be relegated. But you've got to ask the question. You've got to ask the question, do we have too many clubs in some divisions? I mean, when the National League finally agreed to allow the additional promotional places from Step 3 so we could get rid of the Super Playoffs, the much unloved Super Playoffs, they didn't want to relegate any more of their clubs. So they had to increase the number of clubs at Step 2. And they asked, the question was asked at the time, so you want us to take more clubs, but you actually want to reduce your own clubs. How does that work? But it's a question that you have to ask. The day we say, Ben, that there isn't a better way to do things, is the day we should all go home, because clearly there are some cracks that don't need to be papered over. We need to find a way of permanently repairing them, and we'll only do that through working closely together.
I was going to add, though, I mean, with that regard about, you know, what was proposed for this season with regards to relegation and promotion and all that, looking at the top of the NPL Premier Division, there's a fair number of clubs there who would be a shoo-in for the National League, and it's an odd one, isn't it, that you know, we have got bottlenecks, whereas in other places we haven't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a peculiarly football phenomenon, isn't it? In the same way as, only a very, very short few number of years ago, there were bottlenecks, particularly down south, where the predomination in the National Division of the National League was very much clubs in the south. I think in the Northern Premier League, we're blessed with some really, really well-run clubs. I mean, you just look at the top of the, not just the Prem Division, but, you know, looking at the Prem Division, you've got, obviously, South Shields, well-resourced, very well-run, geared for life at the higher level. FC United have had a fabulous year. Neil Reynolds has really got them motoring. Basford could easily sustain themselves at the top level. Warrington easily sustain themselves. Nantwich coming in there as well. Morpeth. So lots of clubs. And then, you know, there's a whole bundle just below them that could so easily be into that and have an aspiration. Go into down into our first divisions and you look at Workington, you look at Leek, you look at Stamford, you look at lots of clubs that are doing it right, they're getting it right, and they want the opportunity to go to the higher level. But again, we have to look at the interests of all the clubs. You want a clear promotion path. The worst thing that can happen is when you get a club that gets promoted, gets up, and can't compete in the one above. Now, I think it's to the credit of the Northern Premier League and its member clubs, that those that have gone up have tended to do very well. I mean, we often make the point that clubs that have come out of the Northern League, contrary to what certain individuals in that neck of the woods, what they used to say in terms of, you don't want to go in the Northern Premier League because it's the road to disaster. In the vast majority of cases, it's proved to be the road to the National League.
Yeah, I was going to add though, Mark. I mean, there is an elephant in the room, and that is regards to none of us know when's next going to happen, if I can word it that way, because we don't know when pre-season is. We don't know when competitive sport can start again. And with that regard, finances are stretched, and we've had clubs on who've started just giving pages and that kind of thing. The longer that this goes on, the more difficult this is going to get. And, you know, all this talk about structures and that kind of thing, we might be at a point where it's answering itself. I mean, how ready is non-league football for a lengthy spell where we haven't got any income coming in, potentially?
Well, it isn't. We are, as the statement goes that we hear now several times a day, every day, we are in uncharted territory. You know, we're not talking about wartime, because wartime tended to put us in a very, very different period. you know, we're in uncharted territory. Are our clubs prepared? No. I think no one could actually be prepared for this. I think our clubs have done superbly well to hunker down, to try and get rid of all the costs that they're incurring, and simply focus on staying alive. A common fallacy is that leagues have got stacks of money that they're sat on, and we're just hoarding it, and that's not the case. We're a not-for-profit organisation, so we don't sit on large quantities of money that should be going out to clubs. That's another reason why it's really important that we replace the BetVictor sponsorship, so that clubs can continue to receive what funds they do receive. There's no pot of gold out there. I mean, yes, we're trying to press government through the FA to come up with a rescue package, but we're in there with every other sector, all crying out to be made a special case. The Premier League isn't going to come and dig us out. They've got other problems. They're looking at potentially £750 million hole in their budgets if they fail to fulfil their broadcasting contract. So they've got plenty on their plate as well. That doesn't mean we can't do with what we are doing to try and find some funds somewhere. But there is no white knight on his charger coming over the hill. So we are on our own. We've got to make the best of it and support each other. To your point, is there going to be a future? Well, we have to work on the basis that there is going to be a future. We have to work on the basis that the vast majority of our clubs can come through this. And we hope that, you know, even one, if one club would go to the wall, that would be a tragedy. So what we have to therefore do is, once we are in a position where we can play competitive football in front of crowds, and that's the key point, I'll come back to that in a second, that's why we have to ensure that when that can start happening again, we can provide tools, encouragement, whatever it is, to help clubs tap into new revenue streams, find new ways of doing things, and that means finding new ways of doing things ourselves. But to tap back into the issue of behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Now, it may well be that in the professional game, to get broadcast contracts fulfilled, that pro clubs may be prepared to stage games behind closed doors. That doesn't work in non-league football. You can't just have games. Our clubs can't afford to be playing games behind closed doors. But there's some practical reasons behind that. So if you were to do that, you'd have to be testing every player after every game. Testing isn't cheap. And then what happens if you've got a team that say, actually, I don't want to put my players in jeopardy? What happens if a single player then goes down with the virus as a result? So there are massive risks in and around that. At our level, we can't afford to be playing games behind closed doors. And even if social distancing is relaxed, we still have to plan for being right at the very back of the queue. Can you imagine going to a club and having to get volunteers to space people out 2 metres apart? I mean, it might work at some of our very, very smallest grounds, but human nature says that that's not going to be workable. So if you look at things on that basis, it's not just about lockdown being removed. It's about social distancing as well. It's about recognising we have got that duty of care to our players and our supporters, not to put them in harm's way. So we have to continue to follow government and the medical advice in terms of when we can start again. Funnily enough, only next week we have a call with the other leagues and the Alliance leagues to say, right, OK, let's start contingency planning. We need a timetable from the National League because we need to know when they're going to actually make, their clubs are going to make this decision about, do they resume at some point? Is it points per game or is there some other Duckworth-Lewis type magical method that they can deploy to determine the sporting outcome of their competition? Because until we know that, we actually won't know when you can actually plan for next season to start. So you are effectively planning with one arm behind your back and a blindfold on.
I think Toronto's John Wilkin in Rugby League, he said it would be indulgent to assume we're going to get just to touch upon your point you made earlier, it's, you know, for non-league footballers to be, you know, at the front of the queue getting tests when there's people on the front line not getting tests, it's just not going to happen, is it?
It is. Can you imagine the PR message? I mean, take non-league football out of it. Pampered footballers get preferential access to testing over NHS frontline staff. I know that's an extreme example, but the PR, it would be a PR nightmare. The game is already struggling on, with its image. So I think the practicalities are immense. I understand entirely why the professional game needs to complete its fixtures. But for us at our level, behind closed doors, with everything that that brings, is impractical.
So all that being said, and a lot of listeners will be listening to this now feeling a bit glum all of a sudden, because, you know, I think realities need to hit home. That, you know, this might be the long haul there for a return to people attending football matches, and therefore, like you say, non-league football matches happening. So what's the strategy then to make sure, because you said earlier we're on our own. I mean, we can't be, can we? Because the sport needs a pyramid, and for a pyramid to exist, it needs the bottom rungs to be as healthy as the top rungs.
It's a great theory.
Thanks.
great theory. And I'm going to come with a bit of positivity in just a second. But again, we do have to be realistic. The FA is facing a £100 million hole as a result of not being able to complete this season. The Premier League is looking at a hole of £760 million. I can't remember the figure for the EFL. So you're talking about the cost of football running into billions rather than millions. Now, I think it would be highly naive of us to believe that someone is going to wade in and give us a tranche of money. There are some pots that we are going after, and whether we have even 1% chance of it, we should continue to go after those pots of money. In the meantime, what we have to do is to plan different scenarios. So we have to be full tilt ahead. The fact that there's never been a worse time to try and find a new sponsor hasn't stopped us getting conversations away. So there are brands out there that are prepared to look at the current situation and say, actually, this is a good thing to be involved in. We want to be involved. This is fantastic stuff. This is community-based football. The fact that the communities are stuck in their own homes at the moment, that won't last forever. And it is a proven tool, certainly for brand awareness and lots of other marketing things. So there is some optimism there. The question is, that light at the end of the tunnel, how far off is it? So clubs, I think, are being extremely ingenious. And it's a wonderful thing about the human condition. When the chips are down, there are some bright people out there coming up with smart ideas for just giving pages and doing things remotely and doing whatever they need to do to adapt the new reality, whether it's streaming past games or through Zoom and things like that, whatever it is to maintain their connections with their local communities. So that's continuing. So what can we do as a league? What we have to do is to use the hiatus to say, right, what's wrong with our level of the game? And what can we do to put that right? So that when we do play football again, and the key message is we will play football again. I don't know when it's going to be, but yes, we will. And we all have to have the optimism and the determination that we will come back, that when we do come back, that we can make life better. That's certainly what's driving me and the people that I work with. And if we reach the position where we honestly think that we're doomed, then we should all go, we're not doomed. Yet this is a challenge. Yet it's a crisis. Are we going to survive? Absolutely we are. And are we going to be better at the end of it? Maybe not immediately, but if we've got a path and a plan to address some of the problems that we have at our level of the game without detriment to the majority, then we have to look at it.
Well, just before we go, Mark, like we said, I've been conducting this interview looking at the National League to see what happens, but the Dutch League have basically just announced that there will be no league champions and no relegation and promotion this season, so effectively mirroring what's happened with step three and below. But an academic question now, which could prove to be academic: if the National League do decide there's promotion in the guise of Barrow, who might need to go up to make the EFL work next season. If points per game does come back into it, do you reckon that should filter down?
It would be very difficult, and the reason it would be difficult is that the decision has been ratified by 95% of the FA Council. And believe me, having took part in that particular meeting, you know, everything was very discussed in fine detail. I think it would be very, very hard to do so, because it's not so much about promotion. It's about, well, it is about promotion. It's about promotion and relegation. It raises the same questions. Through whatever mechanism, if you take a club out of one level and put it into a higher level without having completed the season, then it leaves it open to challenge. If we go back to where we started and where we started the last time we spoke, whatever you do, you are not going to satisfy people. So let's say that the decision were overturned. Something happens, and for whatever reason or by whatever mechanism, it suddenly became points per game. I could then foresee another challenge, another legal challenge coming from a club that is relegated with 25% of games to play, from a club that is ruled out of promotion, which they could still have won on the playing field. It is a sad reality that many clubs will only see any certain set of circumstances from their own perspective. Well, unfortunately, we don't have that luxury. We have to look at it from the perspective of not just our own leagues, but the whole game.
Well, Mark, that's pretty comprehensive stuff there we've covered. A big thank you for taking the time out your busy day to come on the show. I mean, I've used this phrase a lot, but it is what it is at the moment, football. So
before I go, Ben, yeah, if I could just perhaps offer something out there. It's quite every wonderful thing about football is that we all have opinions. And the fact that one person has an opinion one way and one person has an opinion another doesn't make either of them right or wrong. And what is good is the fact that we are able to have these debates. Unfortunately, somewhere on the line, a decision has to be made. And however you make a decision, somebody somewhere will find fault either with the process or the decision itself. But that's life. That's what we work on. And all of us are football fans at the end of the day.
Mark Harris there, Northern Premier League chairman, and a big thank you to Mark for joining us on this week's show. And also a special thanks to Thomas Feeney earlier for walking us through the lie of the land at the moment as well. But that's it for this week's MPL show. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, make sure you keep an eye on the league website as well as the social media channels for all the latest goings on from the world of the Northern Premier League. But I've been Ben, and you make sure that you all have a lovely and safe weekend. Bye-bye.